story. The other side wasn't so cute. If he was frustrating, or if he was frustrated, if he was scared, or we were scared, or he was bored, or we were bored, or he was alone, or it seemed not the absolute center of attention, he would return into a little howling Gila monster that made Ellie literally cover her ears and run for the room, reminding me over her shoulder as if I'd really forgotten, "Find him a forever home, Mom." The problem with the inquiries coming in was that I could see they were mostly all underestimating the amount of work it would be to bring an adorable pink puppy into their life. His disabilities were profound, and for at least some time, he would require constant care and supervision. Some of the applicants who contacted me had experience caring for blind dogs or for deaf dogs, and that was encouraging, but none of them seemed to grasp the extent of the accommodation this deaf and blind puppy needed. One of the first serious inquiries was from a lovely woman who had experience with dachshunds, including senior dogs who actually had lost both their sight and hearing over time. She was sincere in her interest, but the most we communicated showed the more I realized she wasn't prepared to handle a Chai Daxi high-octane, demanding deaf and blind puppy who would unsettle the calm she had established with her older special needs dogs. She agreed and soon after adopted another special needs senior dog. Another woman and her husband sounded promising, and I was ready to pack Piglet Bart into the car and drive him for a few hours to meet the couple. The plan was derailed when they clarified that they would need to put the little guy in an all-day doggy care. As diplomatically as possible, I advised the couple that the rescue agency had said no. Every night as I settled everyone into their beds, I ran through the concerns with Warren about what I thought we needed to find in the right adopters. Warren listened patiently, reassuring me we'd find the right applicant, that it was early still. "He's not a beginner dog, you know," Warren nodded, agreeing. Throughout my veterinary career, I had seen thousands of puppies enter homes, many of them perfect matches for the beginner dog families. But, I pointed out, some dogs are so complicated, only the most experienced dog people would dare to take on the challenge. At that, Warren raised an eyebrow, sending me his, what are you trying to say, glance. I paused to gather my words. "You and I aren't the only dog people with the experience, time, and energy for a puppy like Piglet. We just have to find the situation like ours." Warren reminded me, "We're not making this decision alone. Gloria and her sister Caroline were really in charge of the adoption decisions. We had input to offer, but Piglet wasn't our dog." My solution was to do a better job communicating those needs based on what we were finding out through our experiences as foster parents. This would allow us to make sure to place Piglet in a home where he could adjust optimally and be given the time, commitment, and care that he deserved. The big problem, as I must have said to Warren a few times, is that his sensitivity and intensity alone make him a potentially poor candidate for most households. Irrationality at times, when we were having these nightmare conversations, I imagined Piglet following everything we were saying. Occasionally, if Warren hadn't gone to sleep before I got into bed, he would take Piglet and Zoe so I could brush my teeth hands-free. The sweet puppy contentment that I observed whenever Piglet was snuggled in with his favorite dad was always remarkable. He also knew, however, he figured it out, that he was expected to sleep with me. With very little prompting, as soon as he sensed that I was in bed, Piglet quietly got up and slowly made his way over the blankets and sometimes passed Zoe to me. I'd hold the blanket up, and having mapped it once, he would go right under, really as if he could see the whole thing. "How does he know?" I constantly asked Warren, praising our foster boy's mastery not only of our bed, but of our whole house. "He's just a prodigy," Warren answered one night, as if we were talking about one of our own kids. In the morning, if I wasn't in a hurry to get out of bed, and if Zozo wasn't there with her raised eyebrows and cocked head, tugging at me to get up and get breakfast going, Piggy would pit-pat in the bed over to his foster dad to say a very happy good morning. That involved some serious tail wagging, more snuggling, and gleeful groaning. Those mornings were rare, as I'd chosen to rouse myself at 6:30 every day to pack Ellie's lunch for her, which I did until she graduated from high school. was a big help to her, and I was subconsciously doing my last bit of morning mothering before our impending empty house. On one such early start to the day, going into our second week with our foster baby, I sat down to check in with Gloria with a text to ask about the progress of Piglet, Bart's littermates. I confided to her that we probably needed another couple of weeks to really get him ready to go and that it wasn't going to be easy. In hindsight, I now see that two compelling and somewhat contradictory goals were in force, the intention to find him the right home and preparing ourselves to say goodbye. I told Gloria, as you can see from the Facebook posts, he's doing very well. He still has his moments of panic, crying and then becoming hysterical, but they aren't as frequent as a week ago. He still loves to be held, of course, but he's able to play, run around, and finally he's starting to chew on toys and bones. He's a very smart puppy. I have no idea how I will part with him. For now, we have quite a few things to accomplish over the next couple of weeks. Then we'll have a better idea of his limitations so we can characterize what he'll need in the long run. He still can't deal with the crate, but I'm hoping that once he figures out that he's going someplace good when he goes into that crate in the car, it will be easier for him. He's only 9 weeks old, so he's pretty much acting his age. I hope the others are doing well. Did you foster them? Could you find homes for them? I'm sure that having a little piglet in a home has made a huge difference in his long-term outcome. The key to that long-term well-being, I believe, then and later, was the amount of time that Warren and I both spent holding Piglet, so crucial for every puppy's overall bonding with humans and especially for traumatized baby dog without the ability to see or hear. In this respect, we were lucky to be fostering him before he was much older and already moving out of the bonding phase. It helped to remind myself that Piglet's anxiety stemmed from his inability to communicate what he wanted and what he needed. He still didn't fully understand we were here to be a constant for him in his daily routine. Tap signals continued to offer us a way to connect and to communicate, which increasingly helped to reassure him and soon changed his whole demeanor. After learning the tap for sit right away, he quickly grasped that taps were a form of communication. Once that idea clicked, we were able to add more and more tap to Piglet's vocabulary. We went from sit to okay, a tap on his sternum, and then began working on wait, his version of stay. In addition to taps, I eventually added the use of breath, even blowing at him to signal come. When I whispered into the side of his cheek, telling him to calm down, be a nice boy, he didn't hear or understand those words per se, but my breath and the vibration of my voice, coupled with some calming strokes to the other side of his face, had the desired effect. Whenever possible, I worked on teaching tap signals to Piglet at the same time that I was using my voice and gestures to speak with the rest of the pack. If it was mealtime and everyone knew to sit in front of their dishes and wait until each one of them had been served, I'd start the process for Piglet of teaching him how to wait before going into his crate to eat his food. I might say something like, "Everyone, wait, look at me," and add a few reminders to wait for everyone to get theirs, as I placed a food dish in front of each dog. Piglet's wait was a gentle tap from my open palm on his nose. This was my technique for getting the group to work together. In this instance, waiting until I gave them their verbal okay, and then they could chow down. This wasn't something we did at every single meal, but the practice resulted in improved impulse control as everyone of the six-pack learned to sit in front of their dishes with food in them until given the okay to eat. If any one of them couldn't resist and had to scarf down food, I might laugh or say, "That was naughty, Zoe," because she loved food so much, and the rest of the pack would love it because they knew they were doing right. Piglet seemed to recognize that the others were doing the things that he was learning to do, and he didn't want to miss out. With his peaceful and powerful nose and ability to sense motion and breathing, he seemed very well aware that he was participating in group activities. Mealtime in his little kitchen crate was a joyous affair, and because he was so tiny and couldn't eat a lot of food at every meal, I got into the habit of giving him lunch every day. The Pink Prince had to eat 3 meals every day. The others would look at me with a glance of, "Why does he get to eat lunch and we don't?" To which I'd explain, "Because he's so little and needs to grow." Then I would give Piglety a good dog tap with a soft pat on his left side. Traveling in the car began to improve. Piglet kept his nose level down, something I assumed meant that he knew we were going someplace good. He happily looked forward to getting a cookie when he got into his car crate, and without a high anxiety he suffered in the beginning, he actually was able to take long, relaxing naps as I drove around working for hours at a time. Some days I would reassure him, "You're going to go to work with your mom today. Already up to go see your girlfriend, Monica?" And it would work to calm him, even though he hadn't heard a word I said. No doubt he was also picking up the energy of the other dogs who were listening and also getting very excited to be going to work with me. In retrospect, the fact that I was already referring to myself as his mom and Warren as his favorite dad was really playing with fire, almost delusional. Warren went along with it because we were co-conspirators in pretending that it would be easy to have a foster project that wouldn't cause enormous upheaval and believe in my ability to be reasonable, to do the right thing, the professional thing. Of course, we were so much in denial. Reality told me that taking on a pink boy was going to be a never-ending responsibility. As much as I told myself I was preparing him to fit into someone else's life, he would always be at the center of everything, and that person was becoming harder and harder to find. Complicating those concerns was how deeply invested I had become in his future well-being and in how much progress we had made together. Maybe the most unexpected piece of the latter development was the reactions coming from so many quarters on social media. The funny thing was that I didn't use Facebook for myself much more than to post a few pictures of Warren, my kids, and my dogs, and my birds. Mostly, I just spent time following rescue groups and some of my high school and vet school friends. I had started a page for a fellow house sparrow enthusiast, so I was very familiar with how to use and how useful social media pages were for connecting to like-minded bird lovers. But after posting some of the pink puppy's earliest pictures and videos, I was totally surprised at how many people started liking and loving and sharing about Piglet Bart. That's how I was first contracted by the many candidates interested in adopting him that I'd sent to Gloria and Caroline. That in itself was mind-boggling, but something else more unplanned had begun to happen after I'd set up Piglet's own page on Facebook on April 7th. The numbers grew exponentially within days. Warren, Ellie, I'd hear myself calling out, and when they came, I'd show them how many hundreds of new fans had liked Piglet's page. We just got over 1,000 fans. All the dogs' tails would start to wag, and Piglet, usually in Warren's arms, would yawn, oblivious to his drawing power. Ellie would look over and check out the page, but then warn me, "Mom, I can't believe you're spending all this time on social media. Didn't you once say it was a waste of time?" I'd wave her off or remind her that I was using social media for something positive. One night, when Warren and I had sat together reading comments aloud and writing back, Ellie sat there at the kitchen table and shook her head before promising to do an intervention. "I can't believe my mom and dad are going to those kinds of parents on Facebook." Warren had reminded Ellie that this was how we were going to find Piglet's forever home, after all, and that was well known that if you wrote back to followers who made comments, it increased engagement many times over. This was convincing, but she still seemed mortified that her parents, especially me, would be posing and poring over comments from strangers. "Mom, you don't even watch TV," Ellie exclaimed, hands up in the air. "You say it's just another noisemaker." She was right about that, but before I could answer, she was gone, and I was drawn to yet another comment, this one from a woman who couldn't adopt a dog, but felt inclined to tell Piglety, "I just want to hug you, sweet boy." A video I had posted of Zoe playing rough with him had earned hearts and smiles and puppy faces, with comments that ran the gamut from "precious, oh precious," to "so adorable," to "this is so cute, he puts a smile on my face every day." Some of the posts were wordy and long in describing what it was that I found so fascinating about communicating with Piglet, or how I admired his pluck and positivity. I wasn't conscious of creating a voice or trying to be funny or schmaltzy. I just was wanting free-flowing information to go out to the people, and I wanted the followers of Piglet's page, who were relating to his pinkness, to know that he was a great dog. Maybe it was the anonymity of social media that let strangers pour their hearts out, I imagine, but some comments were unexpectedly private, yet spoken in a public way. These were confiding less in me than in Piglet about their depression or how he reminded them of a dog they'd lost or how they wished their mother, no longer alive, could have lived to see him. Piglet never gave up, many fans observed, and that inspired them to do the same. After countless drafts aimed at creating an accurate description of our foster puppy, I sent off a final version to Gloria Andrews and her sister Caroline to post on PetFinder.com, which is the most widely used directory of rescued animals in need of adoptive homes. Colbert Veterinary Rescue Services regularly updated Piglet's listing with new pictures and details about Piglet's special needs and care. We had gone back and forth to make sure that we weren't scaring away the right kinds of adoptive families, and also to limit the applicants who wouldn't be the right fit or who had unrealistic expectations. We replaced an earlier listing that showed baby Bart at 8 weeks old to now show him at 10 weeks and settled on this even-handed write-up. Bartlett Piglet is a male dachshund mix puppy who is deaf and blind. He is sweet, friendly, loves other small dogs, is very active and playful, and is very smart. Unfortunately, he has no tolerance for crates and becomes very anxious when he finds himself alone in a crate or grated room. At times, he can become extremely anxious to the point of vocalizing and running around aimlessly, which can last for well over an hour at a time. Bart will need a space, like a small gated room or large exercise pen, where he will be protected from potential danger in the environment, such as stairs, larger dogs, or household traffic. Gates are an absolute necessity to keep him safe. A small dog or dogs will be helpful if they can serve as guides and friends for him to play with and to sleep with. He needs a person to be with him most of the time for at least the first year while he goes through normal puppy stages, settles down, and adapts to his new family and home. He needs a very special owner who's willing to devote the time and energy to teaching him tap signals, interesting athletics like agility, and exploring other potential fun activities. The word owner was one I preferred to avoid with reference to the human-animal relationship, not unlike the word master. Those words raise the offensive suggestion that animals are our property, as opposed to the idea that we are their caretakers and surrogate family members. Still, I didn't want to start a semantics revolution when the goal was to find a wonderful, safe setting in which Piglet would thrive. So the above blurb was the description I sent to Carolyn, Gloria Andrews' sister, who lived in Rochester, New York, at the time, but who regularly spent the spring months in Georgia to help her sister with the rescue work in an even more hands-on way. Carolyn took my description and posted it on PetFinder. They were already getting applications from all around New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Kentucky, which Caroline would screen for any red flags and then forward the ones that found promising onto me. Not that many applications ever got to me because she had already eliminated most from consideration. On the adoption site, we also let applicants know right up front that they would need to meet the following requirements before applying to adopt Bart Piglet. Be 21 years of age or older. Be able and willing to spend the time and money necessary to provide training, medical treatment, and other proper care for a pet for the entire life of that animal. Verify that all family members agree on this adoption. A meet and greet is required for any existing dogs. We will do home visits prior to the adoption and after the adoption to ensure that everyone is adjusting well. In addition to being stringent about getting references for potential adopters, Carolyn requested that every applicant write an essay about their understanding of the causes of Piglet's disability and then describe their specific plan to care for a deaf and blind puppy. I know. It probably appears that somehow I secretly didn't want anyone else to work out. My mother, who had never said no to any animal I'd ever brought home, except the snake, confessed to being concerned by the number of hours I had to invest in the pink foster dog. The way she said the word foster led me to believe she was skeptical I'd let go Piglet in the end. My father stood up for me, at least in the beginning. If Melissa wants and says she's going to do something, you know she does it, he reassured my mother. Both of them were alarmed at Piglet's vocalizations, as I'd put it, but they did agree it was ridiculously cute and very bright. By the middle of April, Piglet's development had begun to spike, and he explored the outdoors and zipped around, mapping the entire yard. The other dogs, especially Susie and Zoe, would check on him and make sure he didn't get lost. Up until then, I'd been cautiously carrying him up and down the wooden stairs, leading him from the backyard into our house. It had occurred to me that he knew where the stairs were and that it would give him a sense of freedom if I guided him up, keeping my hands on his back the whole time. He was super cautious, making small circles around the bottom landing, which was made of slate, until he was ready to go and I could help him center himself and then guide him up. Piglety later learned to go up so well, which gave him the feeling of independence, but he is so small that it actually is dangerous for him to be on the stairs alone. I almost regretted introducing the stairs at all because we always have to be behind him, spotting him in case he takes a wrong step. At the same time, I was excited to see him aspiring to higher heights. In the midst of my excitement, I realized that the stairs, built like a stepladder, had no back on them, and that made this whole challenge even more treacherous for the baby. Before we practiced any more, I scooped the pink puppy up and called my dad, or Pot, as the kids called him, to come over and tell us how to remodel the wooden steps so that they would have backs on them, unlike the contractors I also contacted. He wanted to reconfigure the whole staircase for a steep price. Pot proposed a simple and inexpensive solution. My father was always available to fix anything. When he got started on fixing the steps for us, he didn't question the sudden interest in doing so for a foster dog who was going to get placed very soon. If he thought to ask, I would have said that I didn't think the tiny boy would hurt himself in a couple more weeks with us. Besides, it would be better for the other small dogs in any case. In a matter of days, my dad completed the project, and we beheld a very safe staircase for our little pink boy and the rest of the family. The theme of that same week for Piglety was getting him in out of his comfort zone. I had decided it was time for him to have a couple of road trips and to change up some of the routines I'd carefully designed to give him. On our first outing, a hike into Holyoke, Massachusetts, Piglet joined Ellie, Zoe, and me for a challenging climb up a large mountain. This was Piglet's first time ever on a leash, held by me while walking over rugged terrain. He only walked about 20 feet to pee, and then he kept going backward, but his nose was twitching away with the smells of nature and the thrill of adventure. Otherwise, he let me carry him the whole way, tucked into my nylon vest, which concerned Ellie, but didn't bother me. In my mind, we were milking every moment that he had left with us. Our next outing was to join Ellie for accepted student day at Princeton. Ellie wasn't at all thrilled to have Piglet there, but he was such a distracting conversation piece, and I understood. Piglet, however, was in heaven. Apparently, he loved Princeton and intended to return, as indicated by the mapping he did from the moment we got out of the car. He began making friends the minute he was noticed by Joyce Platt, who worked in the admissions office, an outgoing, welcoming woman with short blonde hair and stylish glasses. "Oh, I could get used to having him here every day," she would say. Piglet was teeny, but whatever reason, he immediately connected with everyone on campus. I mostly carried him around because he was so young, and I initially didn't realize how much he was paying attention. But then when we came back, just as he did with the other places we had visited, he was instantly comfortable and familiar with his surroundings. By this point, I'd become well aware of how he used his nose and tactile senses to map his environment. He had figured out the right way to run around the plastic crate in the middle of our kitchen. He knew where the cocoon dog beds were, and he would go flying into them when he was overly excited while playing with the other dogs. He learned where his toys were and where the furniture was in the living room with every few bumps. He was always very careful. He really didn't like to bump. Depending on what he was doing and what he bumped into, he might bounce off happily and continue on like nothing happened. But other times, much less frequently, he would become very quiet and walk away slowly with his ears back. It depended on what his original mission was, playing. Going back to find a person or a food or something else that only he knew. His development after a month and a half with us gave me the much-needed information. Piglet was adaptable, and he would be fine, I told myself emphatically, to move on to next forever home. When Gloria and her sister sent word that some suitable candidates had been found, my kids, especially Ellie, breathed a sigh of relief. So did Warren, or so I thought. Next week, we'll find out what Warren thought in the book by Melissa Shapiro, veterinarian, Piglet, the unexpected story of a deaf, blind, pink puppy and his family. Well, that completes our readings for today. I do hope you've enjoyed them, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Be healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.